This is the weekend edition of the Daily Gold Podcast, covering precious metals and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roy Byrne.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Daily Gold Podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Dan Norsini. He's a professional off-the-floor commodities trader. You can find his work at traderdan.com. And Dan, starting off, today it looks like we've seen a reversal in the precious metals complex. But before we get to that, something I want to get you to speak about is really the importance of the GLD and those types of ETFs for gold and what they can really signal. And the reason why I ask you is because, in my opinion, some of the top voices in this industry, they've been telling people, follow the GLD, focus on the GLD and the gold going in and coming out. And that's something that you've been speaking about for at least several years. Can you just talk about the importance of that and what it's reflected in this recent move in gold?
Yeah, I sure can, Jordan. By the way, thanks for having me again. It's good to be back with you. The way I look at GLD, the largest gold ETF that we have, is ever since its inception, if you go back to when they first created this thing, and you lay out the rise in or the rise or fall in reported gold holdings that are in that ETF, and you overlay a price of gold over it. I mean, the two of them are moving almost perfectly in sync. As far as I'm concerned, it's a personal view. To me, it's probably the best indicator out there for Western-based investment demand. And I put a lot of emphasis on the Western-based side of things, mainly because, within the gold community, I think it's a given that anybody who's followed the gold market for any length of time understands that from a physical market standpoint, your big players are obviously China and India, and that's never going to change. I mean, that portion of the world, they like physical gold. There's what people like to own the stuff over there. The difference, I think, about that section of the world and what's over here in the West is that Western-based investors tend to buy gold only when there's times of distress or they think there's some sort of issues with the global economy or there's a fear or a concern or there's a nervousness about growth or whether it's currencies or geopolitical issues or whatever. So in that sense, Western-based investment demand rises and falls quite frequently compared to relatively stable source of demand coming out of Asia and India. So, in the past, Jordan, when we've watched bull markets in gold, what we've seen is a general rule. Those guys over there in the East, they don't chase the price higher. They tend to wait for setbacks in bull markets, and they'll come in and buy. As a matter of fact, we've always tried to watch to see signs of a floor on a price retracement. That floor is usually pretty much demonstrated by the amount of buying that will come out of India or China. You'll see them put the floor on the price chart. Western-based investment demand is different than that. It's not price-sensitive in that regard. It basically favors more of a momentum-type buying, like you see in a lot of hedge funds nowadays in our markets. Normally, like I said, China and Asia, they're price-sensitive. When the West moves into the gold market, they simply say, give me the gold. I'm not worried about the price. I'm worried about something else, and I don't care what I have to pay for it. And those guys just come in, and they come in a big way. And when they do, you see that sort of move reflected in the rise in GLD holdings, and not only GLD, but all the rest of the ETFs around that are gold-based as well. But, for us, it's easy to track that GLD because we do get pretty regular data from them. And when you see a surge in reported holdings, you lay that thing up against the gold price, and that thing moves in perfect sync. And so what it does, it tells you that, there is solid-based demand from these Western investors, and these guys are momentum-based, and, they're interested in owning the metal. As a trader or as an investor, you want to see that. I mean, the worst thing possible in my mind is if you watch gold somehow maybe moving up $15, $20, $30, $40, and you see the reported gold holdings going the opposite direction. What that's telling me is that those guys are using a rally to sell. They're not interested in buying. They're using the rally to get out of the market and liquidate gold so they can move it into another asset class. But when you see the price of gold rising along with the reported holdings in GLD, you can tell that's money coming out of different asset classes, whether it's stocks or whether it's bonds, or, you know, foreign flows, wherever it's coming from, it's coming out of those asset classes and it's going into gold. And that's what's necessary to sustain and move higher in gold. You have to have that concerted Western-based buying to keep the gold price supported when you have a move higher in gold. That's just my view.
And let's get your view on what do you think, because we've seen huge inflows into the GLD recently. What do you think the reasons are behind this move that we've seen? And do you think it's sustainable for, let's say, for this year?
Well, you know, it's hard to nail down exactly, Jordan, what's behind this move in gold. I mean, there are several things that are coming into play here. First and foremost, let's go back to the very start of the year when you saw, gold really had a big move higher to start off January. I guess about the middle of the month it was. You had a lot of unrest and uncertainty surrounding global stock markets. I mean, it was almost every day it seemed like we were greeted with the news that, China's stock market sold off overnight. It spilled over into the European market, spilled over into the futures in New York, and then into the actual markets when they opened. And it was almost like every day you're getting an occurrence like that. While that was taking place, you started to see a lot of instability in the currency markets as well. And so bond markets went into upheavals. I mean, you started seeing money come out of stocks and going into bonds. You had what we call the Japanese yen carry trade was reversing, where you had highly leveraged speculative trades where the yen is the funding currency. And just briefly, for the sake of your listeners who may not be quite familiar with that, how that carry trade works is that because interest rates are so low in Japan, matter of fact, they're low just about everywhere, but particularly in Japan, it seems to be the favorite for that carry trade. Large-scale investors, hedge funds, big players can go over to Japan and essentially borrow money from Japanese banks in yen terms, where the loan is very, very, very inexpensive. And then they take that yen that it's almost like getting free money. They go over there, they borrow that money, they take that yen, and they convert it into whatever currency the nation that they want to buy assets with. For instance, if they want to buy U.S. stocks, they'll take that yen and they'll change it or convert it, do an exchange, and put it into dollars, and they'll buy U.S. stocks with it, or they'll buy commodities, or they'll buy whatever they want to buy with it. Same thing with the euro. Well, what happens is as long as that environment is conducive to an attitude of risk, where traders feel comfortable that there isn't much downside for them to put on highly leveraged positions, the carry trade works great. I mean, these guys basically borrow money for nothing. They can leverage it up 2, 3, 4 times, and they make a lot of money. However, once that yen carry trade begins to reverse, if investors get nervous, if they start getting spooked and they start to worry about, we may only have to pay a 0.5% on the yen, but what happens if the currency starts to go up in value and our investments start losing in value? We're going to end up in a hole pretty quickly because we're so leveraged. So you saw this wholesale carry trade unwind that started in January. And as a result of that, you had the safe haven trades came into vogue, basically the risk aversion trades. That brought a lot of money out of stocks, not only here in the U.S., but globally. And you had money rushing into gold as a safe haven. And then that was mainly what was behind that rise that we had in about 4 weeks' time, where the gold price moved from about $1,070 to almost $1,270. I mean, you put almost $200 on in the gold price in a matter of about 4 weeks. I mean, that was phenomenal. So, I mean, that was definitely one thing behind this safe haven trade, this risk aversion trade where gold was actually functioning as a safe haven. Another thing was currency unrest tied to concerns about the British pound, Jordan. I mean, there's an upcoming vote in June. It's a referendum in the UK about whether they're going to vote to leave the EU monetary union. And there's been a lot of concern about people that they may indeed pull out of that. And of course, that brings a lot of unrest into the market. And, when people are like that, what they do is they just run the gold. They immediately just get out and they start running into something safe. Well, so you have that going on. In addition, and you've made a good point on some of your videos as well, the negative interest rate structure that you've seen both in the Eurozone and in Japan, and even the fact that there was chatter about it here in the U.S. I mean, I think most players are agreed that it's highly unlikely that we'd see negative interest rates here in the U.S., but the very fact that it was being discussed along with what was going on in the Eurozone and in Japan. I mean, that gave another reason to buy gold. So there's a host of reasons to buy it, and that's what you've been seeing. You've just been seeing a lot of money coming into gold and coming out of the other asset classes. And so those were your main drivers. And, of course, anytime you saw the carry trades reverse, it seemed like you had the dollar weaken as a result of that, simply because of the way those trades were structured. You know, if you think about it this way, if you've got a lot of U.S. stocks involved in the Japanese yen carry trade, and you're going to reverse that trade, well, that means you're going to sell those stocks. And then essentially what you're going to have to do is you're going to take the money that you made from selling the stocks, and you're going to then convert it back into yen so you can pay back your loan to the Japanese bank. Well, what that did was that puts pressure on the dollar, and it brought the yen, moved the yen higher. So as the dollar weakened, there was another reason to buy gold, because, you know, there still is that linkage between the dollar and gold, that inverse linkage where gold tends to move higher when the U.S. dollar moves lower. So you had a sort of a confluence of maybe four or five different factors behind this recent move higher in gold, Jordan. And I think that's where your main drivers have been.
And I'm glad you talked about currencies, because I want to talk about the dollar. And one of my fears just in recent months has been, you know, the dollar is going to have a big breakout, and that's going to push precious metals lower, and therefore this bear market could continue. I mean, I've been wrong about that in the last couple of months, but I just want to get your views on the potential for gold to decouple with the U.S. dollar. I mean, in that scenario where the U.S. dollar gets a lot stronger and breaks above 100, the dollar index I'm speaking about, I mean, is it possible that maybe gold and precious metals could only have a small correction, or consolidate, or go sideways, or maybe even go higher? I know there's a lot to speak on there, but tell me what you think about the relationship between the dollar and precious metals, and if it's changing a little bit.
Yeah, you know, let me back up and say it this way, Jordan. We've always talked about that linkage between the dollar and gold, you know, that inverse linkage. But there are times when gold will divorce itself from the day-to-day movements in the dollar. What I mean by that is there are days when the dollar can go down, gold can maybe, you know, stagnate, not do much that day, maybe even lose a little bit. There are other days when the dollar can have a strong day, but gold will have a strong day right along with it. And essentially, if you think about it this way, if there was never a decoupling of gold from the U.S. dollar, you would really never get much of a rise or fall in the gold price when viewed in terms of other foreign currencies. And what I mean by that is, like, gold priced in terms of euro, how many euros it takes to buy an ounce of gold, or gold priced in terms of the British pound, or gold priced in terms of the yen, et cetera, or the Aussie or the Canadian dollar. And, you know, you and I, we were talking about this before we got on air. I mean, there's a very good point you made about the currency movements and gold prices in terms of the yen, or in terms of the euro, in terms of the British pound. I mean, there has been some pretty strong moves there. Matter of fact, if you look at a chart of gold priced in terms of the British pound, so, you know, how many British pounds does it take to buy an ounce of gold? Well, I mean, you're back at levels there on that chart that we haven't seen since, about 3 years ago, 3 years ago. So you're essentially talking about a three-year high in the price of gold in British pound terms. When you look at gold price in terms of the euro, I mean, that's had a nice move as well. And it's about, it's close to about a year high in there. You look at gold price in terms of a yen. So, you know, the currency has been moving higher in terms of other foreign currencies as well, which tells you that it is functioning as a quasi-currency. I mean, you know, that's the thing about gold. I mean, you never quite know what it's going to do. I mean, it can move as a quasi-currency. It can move as a commodity. It can move as a safe haven. It can move as an inflation haven. There's a lot of different reasons for this, you know, for that metal to move. And the thing about it, trying to nail it down, sometimes it's like nailing Jell-O on a wall. I mean, you get it down once, and then something shifts and then moves a different direction, or it seems like a different driver has it. Well, I think a lot of the movement that we've seen in those currency markets, again, the instability, and again, you know, the British pound obviously is associated with that upcoming referendum on the Eurozone in the UK. But in terms of the euro and in terms of the yen, that's directly related to the negative interest rates in both of those in the eurozone as a whole and as in Japan as a nation. And if you look at it this way, I mean, there's really no opportunity cost whatsoever for a European investor or a Japanese investor to hold gold. There just isn't any opportunity cost. I mean, you don't have – it's not like you can take your that same amount of money and put it into a government bond. I mean, they're paying next to nothing over there. So why not? Why not own gold in terms of those other currencies? So if you're a Japanese investor, why not buy gold? If you're a European investor, why not buy it? I mean, and that's the mentality that is in there. And rightly so, because, again, there's no opportunity cost. You have limited downside in the sense that, you know, interest rates don't look like they're going up anytime soon over there. Stock markets are still a little bit shaky there. And, of course, you know, you've got every incentive to perhaps expect some capital gains on top of that. So it's a good store of value, and I think that's why you're seeing it supported there. Now, going back to the, you know, original your question about the currencies, with the dollar, you know, I think right now all the eyes have turned to the upcoming European Central Bank's meeting next week, Jordan. They have a big policy meeting. And you probably remember, I mean, it wasn't all that long ago where they had built up these great expectations about what was going to happen, about, you know, going further into negative interest rates. They're going to produce some additional stimulus. Substantial additional stimulus is kind of what they were hinting at least that's what Draghi was leading the markets to believe. And as a result of that, you know, the market basically began to pressure the euro lower in anticipation of that announcement that was going to come out of that policy meeting. Well, of course, the meeting came and went, and the announcement was made, and the market just couldn't believe it. Everybody was shell-shocked and underwhelmed would be a word to describe it. And the reaction in the currency markets was very, very swift, very severe. The euro had a sharp rally, very, very sharp rally. The dollar sold off very sharply, essentially because Draghi and the ECB misled everybody as to what they were going to do. And the currency markets had anticipated, and now everybody had to reverse those positions. And so all the euros they sold, they had to buy back. All the dollars they bought, they had to sell. And you had that big reversal. So now we've got another meeting coming up next week. And again, it's about the same topic. It's about whether or not the ECB is going to come out with additional stimulus, whatever form that might take, or whether they're going to leave policy on hold, not make any changes to it, et cetera. And when we get that announcement, I suspect we're going to get another reaction in this market. I mean, if the ECB wants to come out and say, hey, we underwhelmed last time, maybe we should overwhelm this time. Maybe we'll see them do that. The question is, what if they do that? Exactly how does that impact gold? Well, if the euro drops sharply, the dollar goes up sharply as a result. Let's say if they underwhelm us, okay? Let's use that way. The dollar goes. Let me say this again. I get myself confused. If the dollar rises because they come out with a strong stimulus package and the euro falls, you might see some pressure on gold simply because the relationship between gold and the dollar. However, that being said, you could very well see euro price gold stay very strong or very firm in that sort of situation, because if the euro were to weaken substantially, that, again, that would give a lot of incentive for European-based investors to hold that metal. No opportunity cost to hold it. You know, we could see forever if they come out and they disappoint, and the euro rallies and the dollar sells off sharply. Well, then you would think in a situation like that, that would be supportive for gold because the dollar would weaken substantially. So there's some unknowns that are what we're going to have going into next week. I guess we're just going to have to see and watch. Sometimes it's not so much the news, Jordan. It's the reaction to the news, like we got this morning initially on that payrolls report. You know, when the payrolls number came out, it was stronger than expected. The initial reaction to the gold price was to move lower. It sold off, actually. You were down, I guess it was $2, $3, $4 at one time. Well, as players started to look into the report and they started looking at the wages component and noticed that wages were flat, they weren't rising, people began to reevaluate, well, whether maybe the Fed's not going to hike after all, like we thought they might do with the strong headline number. And you had the market reverse, and gold shot up, you know, from down around 1258 or whatever it was, ran all the way to 1280. I mean, you had a huge run in that market. Now, of course, in the afternoon, we're giving a lot of that back. But the fact is, you're looking more for the reaction of the market, not so much the news itself.
Right. Now, yeah, let's turn to the next week or two. And, I think, as you said, gold hit 1280, trading at about 1263 right now on my screen. If we're starting a short-term correction here, what levels would you be looking at in gold as far as support for wanting this uptrend to hold or still be in effect?
Well, let's look at that, because like you said, Jordan, I mean, you've got definitely some disappointing action here late in the afternoon on Friday, particularly among the mining shares. You know, the mining shares have been very, very strong recently. I mean, big, sharp move up. I mean, you know, we were down around 100 on the HUI in the middle of January, and, you know, we were up almost at 183 here. So, I mean, we put on 83 points in the HUI in about 6 weeks' time. I mean, that is a phenomenal move higher. So it doesn't look to me like this thing is over, but it does look to me like there's going to be a pause here. And, you know, based on what I'm seeing in the HUI. Now, here's a caveat to that. You know, I've been concerned about the buildup of speculative long positions in the gold market over at CME, you know, formerly the COMEX. However, that's been offset by what we talked about earlier when we first started, the huge increase in holdings in GLD and some of these other gold ETFs as well. I mean, it's been phenomenal demand. So when you get something like that, it tends to alleviate some of my concerns about the speculative imbalance. However, you know, and during that process, we've seen the HUI to gold ratio stay very strong. It hasn't shown any signs of weakening. We'll have to watch this because this price pattern, this chart pattern, the HUI today generally is suggestive of a pause or a price retracement is coming when you see something like that after an extended move higher. So you basically had you opened, you had a big move higher, and then you gave back the entirety of the session's gains, and you moved into negative territory. You know, there's a lot of candlestick patterns that you can look at. They have different names to them, but either way, they're all bearish. So you have a pattern like that in the HUI. On the gold chart, you have a pattern like that as well. Generally, that tells you that your upside has been exhausted temporarily. You're going to need some stimulus from somewhere else to push it higher, some sort of news, some fresh information the market hasn't gotten, whether it's a currency event over the weekend or something coming out of China, whatever. But that being said, right now, you look like the tendency for this market would be to set back and take a pause here. So if we're just looking at the chart, gold had run itself into a coiling pattern for most of the month of February. You know, we had a big spike up toward 1270 in the early part of the month. It faded, it ran down, fell below 1200, hit 1190, and then rebounded. And then it had been working back and forth in the zone, a congestion pattern, kind of a triangle that was coiling. Yesterday, it broke out to the upside out of that coiling pattern. And, of course, it made this big run today to 1280. Generally speaking, technical analysis will tell you that if a coiling pattern is going to be valid and you get a subsequent price retracement after a breakout, the market may come down and try to retest the level at which it broke out from the coil. So the coil, the trend line on that coil comes in around 1245 or so. That's roughly where the breakout point is, 1245, 1247 or so, somewhere in that general ballpark. So if we do get a price setback here, I would look for initial support to show up in that market right around that level, Jordan, somewhere right around there, 1245, give or take a few dollars on either side of that. If for some reason it fell back within the coil, it broke down below that level, I think it would go down and try to test the lower uptrend line on the coil. Next week, that'll come in there somewhere around 1227 to 1230. So those would be the two support levels I look for next week, right around 1245 or so initially, and then somewhere around 1230 on that. I personally would not want to see gold fall out of that coil to the downside, although I can tell you if it did and it went to 1220 and bounced from 1220, you'd still be okay. You know, the reason I'm saying this is because even though we've had that big build in that GLD holdings, we still have a lot of hedge fund longs, a lot of speculative long interest in this market. So you always have to be cognizant of that. There's always the potential for those guys to get those stale longs to start to liquidate if the market loses its upside momentum. And being that there's so many of them and you're getting a relatively large build in the commercial and the swap dealer category, you know, you could have some potential for some long liquidation there. If the market runs down to about 1220 and bounces and holds, I think you'll be okay. If it falls below 1220, With that long liquidation potential there, I think we will see 1,200 again. I think it'll go down and retest 1,200 to see whether it can keep a 12 handle in front of the price. So that's the levels I'm looking for. Of course, the gain ain't going to the upside now. You're going to have to go ahead and take out today's high right around 1,280. And I do think that if you do have enough buying come in to take that level out, I think we'll see 1,300 pretty quickly in gold. You will have additional momentum-based buying come in there, and particularly if that is accompanied by another subsequent rise in the reported GLD holdings, I think you'll make 1,300 easily. But next week, if somebody was to pin me the wall on this, I would say my initial reaction was to be look for the metal to be weaker Sunday night, unless we get some news out of China over the weekend, you know, that would be bullishly construed for the metal.
Okay, on that note, Dan, before we let you go, why don't you tell our listeners about your website, the work you do there, and how they can subscribe to your service.
Well, thanks, Jordan. Yeah, they can visit www.traderdan.com and come on over and take a look at it. We basically talk about the markets, do a lot of analysis over there, technical analysis, try to analyze some of the fundamental reasons behind why things are moving. I mean, that's one of the things that I think all of us as traders and investors are trying to wrap our hands around this thing and say, why are prices moving the way they are? You know, what's the drivers here? Personally, for me, Jordan, I think most people I've talked to the same way. They kind of like to know why prices are moving. I mean, sometimes we can see what's going on, but we don't necessarily know the why until it's a little bit later. Well, if we can figure that out, hopefully we can profit from it. So that's always been our battle, trying to figure out why is that. But if they can come by and look at TraderDan.com, maybe they'll find something of interest there to them.
Okay, Dan, thanks so much for coming on today. I and my listeners, we really appreciate your analysis, and hopefully we can have you back again in the weeks ahead.
You bet, Jordan. It's my pleasure. I really enjoyed chatting with you. It's good to do this from time to time. Thanks again for having me.
Same here. Thanks, Dan.